Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hey, good afternoon. Joe Beamer in for Tom Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Bowerly is out, let me tell you. He posted some pictures yesterday on social media. He is out loving life and enjoying it with his significant other and listeners. And again, can't wait till he gets back and lets us in on everything. Chris Kroc, you heard him. He was in for me the last 2 hours. Great show. I mean, we've been very fortunate. John Grayson, three great shows this week. Chris Kroc, and then tomorrow, the financial guys are in for me. So hopefully you're enjoying that. Hopefully you're enjoying me filling in for Tom. Like I said, after Labor Day, we'll be back to the lineup that you know and I hope love. And again, thank you to everyone who joined me yesterday. Sandy Beach, Dan Nevrith, Keith Radford, Janet Snyder, Anthony Cumia, and George Nori. Really want to thank you. We've been sending it to some people in corporate, and I hope they're enjoying it. But I enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed it to celebrate National Radio Day. Maybe something we'll do annually, right? Now, my idea, and maybe we can get this to work next year. You know, the old KB studio, I believe, is abandoned. I think it was a dentist office for a while. I believe the old KB studio on Main Street in Buffalo is currently abandoned. And no, I'm not going to do an abandoned show. Hold on. I would love to bring a Comrex there and do National Radio Day from the building where so much radio history was made. So maybe we can get that to work for next year on National Radio Day. But yesterday was great. It was, you know, I mean, that show, I will definitely put in the Joe Beamer, the Joe Beamer classic shows. There's very few. That might actually be the only classic show right now. So hopefully we can add to it. But like I said, maybe next year we do it from the old KB studio. Would that be GOAT? Would that be like greatest of all time if we did National Radio Day from the GOAT KB studio? We'll have to wait and see. Anyway, thank you for being here on a Thursday. There is so much to get to. And Chris was talking about this a little bit before he got out of here. And, you know, I hate to go back to a year ago or 2 years ago or, you know, the last administration. But, you know, I do feel that it is important to find out exactly what the hell was going on at 1600 Pennsylvania, right? I mean, you've got so many people, he's been out of office for 5 months. Why do you care? No, I don't know. You talked about Trump the entire time he was out of the White House. But I do care that the person who is president is actually doing the duty of president. I think that is a fair question, and I think it is right for the American people to know, was the person sitting, well, we don't know if he was sitting in the Oval Office. Reports are he wasn't. But the person that was president, was that person actually serving as president? And today we learn that Ian Sams, former White House spokesman, spoke face to face with Biden on just two occasions in his over 2 year role in the administration. That's according to House Oversight Chairman James Comer. Now, this is big on two things. Number one, someone actually talked to the Oversight Committee and didn't just plead the fifth. But it also shows what multiple books now have confirmed, and that is that everyone in the White House knew that Joe Biden was not in his, let's say, in his best shape, and that he was on a decline, and that they were trying to not only hide him from the media and hide him from the American people, but they were hiding him from people within the administration. And so now you have to ask, well, who was hiding him? Who was playing the role of president? Who on the inside knew? And I think they all knew, right? If you're in a position of spokesman, right? Now, of course, he's not the press secretary. We all know he was not the press secretary. We saw the press secretary, and she would answer questions. Karine Jean-Pierre. We all know she was the press secretary after, what's her name on MSNBC? Jen Psaki left. Then it was Karine Jean-Pierre for the majority of the administration. But he was someone who spoke for the White House, right? He was a member of the administration. And when you're being shielded from your boss, from the president, aren't you asking some questions? Aren't you saying, hey, what's going on here? So I feel they all knew. They all kept it from you. And now we're learning more and more. And I think it's important. You've got so many people on the political left who want to say, this is just distraction. You know, we got to focus on Trump. And it's like, well, number one, all you wanted to do when Biden was president was focus on Trump. And number two, I mean, this again was a guy that was president of the United States, in name at least. And we have to know what was going on. The American people should know who was calling the shots. Some absolutely disastrous, right? The border became a complete mess under Biden. The withdrawal in Afghanistan was embarrassing. I mean, the decisions made under that administration have led to a lot of problems within America. We see with illegal immigration. A lot of problems with people trusting their government. A lot of people lost trust in the American government under Biden. And yes, a lot of it had to do with COVID. And when he took over, the steps that were taken and the lies that were given from the White House, right? I mean, remember, if you get vaccinated, you can't get sick. You can't spread it. Well, first it was you can't get sick. Then it was you can't spread it. These turned out to be lies. We didn't know what we were injecting into our bodies. And then you had the withdrawal in Afghanistan. As I said, you had the economy, which became a mess. High inflation under Biden. The border completely out of whack. Crime an issue. And if Joe Biden wasn't making these decisions, if he was not actually signing these documents, it was an auto pen that he didn't even know these were being signed. Well, yeah, we deserve to know. And the contrast to Joe Biden, the complete opposite to Joe Biden, who you never saw. I mean, again, and there are people, I understand if you work in that administration, why you're defending Biden. Well, you're defending yourself. You want a job. You don't want to be kept out of employment the next time something might come up. So I understand them lying. What I don't understand are, you know, the everyday Democrats, right? Your neighbor, your family member, who is still trying to defend Joe Biden. It's like, what are you gaining from that, number one? And number two, you cannot honestly believe that. Like, we all saw that debate. You think that guy was running the country? You think that guy was making the, quote, difficult calls? Come on, just be honest. And then now their big line is, well, why are you paying so much attention to Biden? Well, it was only 5 months ago. A lot of the issues that we are facing in this country are because of things that were done during his administration that are now trying to be undone by the current administration. And then, yes, so you have Biden, and on the opposite, I mean, Trump is the complete opposite. Again, agree or not with his policy, you see Donald Trump, President Trump, every day. The man is in front of cameras every day. He's taking questions from the media, most of which do not like him, every day. And then we learn that tonight he is going to be on the streets of Washington, D.C. Here's what he had to say just a few minutes ago.
And I'm going to be going out tonight. I'm going to keep it a secret, but I'm going to go. You're the only one that knows. You and your lots of listeners. You have a great show. You have a very successful show, by the way, in case you haven't heard that. But I'm going to be going out tonight, I think, with the police, with the military, of course. So we're going to do a job. The National Guard is great. They've done a fantastic job.
Now, I realize this is probably mostly a photo, a photo op. He's going to be out there standing with the police, standing with the military. I don't think we're going to see Trump slapping the cuffs on anybody, but he's there. I mean, you see some of these shots from the White House on the night shows, when they're pulling back, and the light's still on the Oval Office, right? The guard is still outside the door. So again, love him or hate him, he is visible. He's clearly working. He's clearly doing the job. And for 4 years, we never saw the president. We saw the first lady more than we saw the president. And we never saw the vice president until it was her turn to run. So there's a lot of questions about what actually was going on. Who was approving what? Who was putting the auto pen to work? And these are the issues that we have to get resolved. These are the answers we have to get. And I think it's a complete slap in the face to your country when you're asked, what did you know about the last 4 years in the administration that you served in? You plead the fifth. I think people deserve to know. But again, you have people in positions of power. You have people in politics. They think, and I've said this before, obviously talking about our county executive, they think they're better than you. They think they deserve to know more than you. They don't have to tell you anything. And obviously that's how the people involved in the Biden administration feel. They feel like you don't have to know. Only they need to know. It's none of your business. When in reality, yeah, it is. It's the American people's business to know what the hell is going on in the White House. But this Trump going to be out in D.C., this Trump, President Trump going to be out in D.C. with the police and the military. What do you think about that? 803-0930, star 930. I'd love to know what you think about this. And, the comparisons to a Biden presidency and a Trump presidency. Give it to me in a statement. How would you compare the two? Because as time goes by, as long as Republicans have the majority in Congress, the lies of the last 4 years are going to be brought up. They're going to be discovered. And again, I think it's what the American people, they need to know. Obviously there are certain things that you can't tell until it happens, right? You can't have the president out there saying what they're going to do with the military, right? You can't talk about a planned military strategy. But there's a lot of things that, I think the American people should be in on. Hey, what's going on with the budget? What's going on with plans to help the economy? What's going on at the border? Like, these are all things that, what's going on with the proposed Bill Stadium? These are things you don't have to keep to yourself and then lie about, the team going to Austin. These are things that the people who pay to fund the government, to fund the country, to fund the state, to fund the county. Yeah, taxpayers should be in on what's going on, who's making these calls. And, you know, why is this the right thing to do with either your money or the direction of the country? 803-0930, starting at 30, gets you on the phone. It also gets you on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, where we will talk with you after the news. I should also say, we did get some big news on this out of Letitia James' office.
Welcome back. There's a Fox News alert here. An appeals court has just thrown out President Donald Trump's $364 million civil fraud penalty. This just happened. It is a developing story. We're getting a lot more information, a big news story for the day. We're going to bring you more details as we get them.
And Letitia James has responded from her residence in Norfolk, Virginia. So we'll have to wait to see that statement. But a big day, for the president, right? You get some, you get what I think is a bombshell about the former president, and then you hear he's going to go out to D.C. or he's going to be on the streets in D.C. and that almost $500,000 that Letitia James tried to get from him. Yeah, that no longer is the case. The appeals court tosses that civil penalty out. So the winds are stacking up for Trump. What do you think? 803-0930, star 930. It's Beamer in for Bowerly on WBEN.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Oh, come on. That's right. Ultimate Dance Party 97 continues on. Now, Tanner, you've heard this song before.
Yes, you may think I live under a rock at times with how uncultured I am, but at least I've heard that before. There's something wrong with you if you haven't heard the Macarena before.
Well, this was big when I was at the North Hornell Elementary School, and they would have us do, this was like stretching out for gym class. We would do the Macarena. That was like, they would have us do the Macarena dance in the gym at North Hornell. I can remember it like it was yesterday. One of my all-time favorite dance songs. Now, I like the remix, you know, where the young ladies are in there. I don't know. Have you heard the remix, Tanner, with the young ladies? They have a few chords and they're talking. I believe, if I remember correctly, they are talking about a one-night encounter with another man. If I remember the lyrics of the remix correctly. Have you heard that version?
No, I haven't, but based on how you just described it, I'm intrigued now.
It's not as popular as the one you played. Obviously, what you played is what everyone knows, but there is a remix version with some ladies, and I believe they're talking about a one-night encounter with a man while her boyfriend was out of town, and this guy was so fine, if I remember the quote. Well, we'll play it during the break. It's Beamer in for Bowerly. Yes, Tanner's spinning the tunes. We've got Ultimate Dance Party 97. In my opinion, one of the greatest music compilations put together. And we've been playing it throughout the week. We are talking about at 803-0930, star 930. It's been breaking throughout the day, but just a little more insight on what exactly was going on in the White House the last 4 years. And if you're just joining us, I'll do a quick recap. Ian Sams, who was a White House spokesman for a little over 2 years during the administration, told the House Oversight Committee that in his a little over 2 years as a White House spokesman, again, not the press secretary, someone tried to call me out on that on Facebook, not the press secretary, that was Karine Jean-Pierre after Jen Psaki. He was a White House spokesman. You know, he would do the weird interviews on the front lawn on the morning shows. Now, he says in his just over 2 years, he saw the president twice. Now, this is someone who is supposed to be speaking on behalf of the White House. How are you speaking on behalf of the White House if you don't see the president, if you're not having conversations? What is this, a game of telephone going on at the White House? It starts with, you know, are we supposed to believe that Biden's talking to who? Jill. And then she talks to Karine Jean-Pierre, who talks to someone else, who talks to Ian Sams, and then he gives it. If I remember correctly, that message never gets from the front of the bus to the back of the bus when we used to play that game in school. Remember, on field trips, you'd play telephone, right? Usually, you'd start actually at the back of the bus, and then you try to see if the bus driver would play, and the bus driver would yell out what message got back to them. I don't know. Sometimes I would purposely screw it up, but that's not what we're talking about. So, I mean, this is just another peek, right? We've had the multiple books, and I would urge, you know, I'm not much of a reader, but I have taken out the audio version of these books thanks to the Buffalo Library. And the Libby app, which is free, and I have listened to these books, and you know, again, they're a great insight. Now, the Jake Tapper, Alex Thompson book, I think, is the most informative, and yes, you do have to go through that book realizing that these two men helped cover up what was going on, because as close as, you know, people were, you know, the press never wanted to speak out and say, you know, it's weird how little we've talked to Biden. We haven't seen Biden while waiting for this or that. They never wanted to speak up until afterwards, and they could make tons of money on it. So that is the story that's going on. And again, I mean, you got to give Ian Sams credit. He's actually talking and not pleading the fifth. He sat for more than 3 hours with committee staff and departed without answering reporter questions. He had characterized her report as false and included inappropriate personal comments. Now, if you remember her, determined back during the her report that Joe Biden was an elderly man with a poor memory. Now, remember, that was a big outrage. This is before the debate when her put that in his report. However, I think we are now starting to learn that this was the reality most days in the White House. Goes on to say one White House colleague who worked with Sams throughout his employment there found it credible that he had virtually no access to Biden, noting that both Sams' office was in the next door Eisenhower executive office building rather than the West Wing, and that he typically interacted with intermediaries such as communications chief Anita Dunn and White House counsels Stuart DeLeary and Ed Siskel. Right. So, you know, again, there's people when I posted this on social media, people pushing back. Well, what kind of communication is he supposed to have with the president? Well, as a White House colleague says, someone of his title usually in the West Wing. And if you didn't know that from this colleague telling you, you know, just watch the show The West Wing. Instead, he's in a building outside the White House. Again, every time Trump does something that's not normal, we have to get this is not normal, right? You got a bunch of libs out there. That's their cover photo. This is not normal. Oh my gosh. Oh my, did you see what Trump did? Oh my gosh. He went to Alaska. He tried to end a war and he talked to Putin. Even though, you know, Schumer talked to Putin. He's got those pictures of him laughing, having a donut with Putin, right? Let's ignore that. Everything Trump does, we have to hear this is not normal. But literally, the day-to-day operations for the former president were not normal. It was not normal. And all signs are pointing to a massive cover-up. And yes, a majority of the media would love to ignore this, right? They got the initial out there so they can say, well, we cover this. We cover this. But I think it's far deeper than what we thought. And again, we will learn more. If it's the last thing this Congress does, we're going to learn more. But every time they tell you that something Trump did is not normal, just remember, day-to-day operations in the last White House, almost nothing was normal. Not just was Ian Sams in a different building, Jill Biden was at the head of the table during cabinet meetings. I mean, seriously. You want to come back to this is not normal every time Trump opens his mouth, but just completely forget? I'm sorry, Jill Biden, you're the first lady. You're in on cabinet meetings, which, by the way, Biden had very few. Again, not normal. So that's the latest, and I'm sure we'll get some comments about that over the weekend on Hardline, so you won't want to miss that. 803-0930-star-930 if you'd like to join the join the show. I do have to play this for you. So Trump is going to be out tonight in D.C. And remember, we're told that everyone in D.C. hates Trump cracking down on crime. Well, this is from NBC Washington this morning.
I feel safer. I do. It doesn't bother me at all. I just feel more military police presence there are. I just feel like I'm more inclined to be downtown more often than I usually am, especially in the evenings.
And if you take Metro bus, be aware you may see National Guard troops at the bus stops as well.
Yes, yes. And you know where else you would have seen the National Guard? Oh, in the New York City subway when Kathy Hochul did that. There was no problem when Hamburg Kathy did that. That was fine. Trump does it. It's a big deal. And we're gonna cry over it. But hey, people do feel safer. I mean, again, NBC, credit to NBC4 for playing the interview. People do feel safer. And when you see police and guard, when you see a heightened police presence, you're going to feel safer. You're going to know that, hey, I am protected going wherever it is you want to go. And not only is that good for people's safety, it's also good for business in the district. Now more people will feel safe going out of their houses and going on the subway and going out for dinner, maybe going to a Nationals game. I don't know why you torture yourself like that, but maybe you want to go to a Nationals game, right? You want it to be safer. I mean, again, this shouldn't be a left versus right issue. Even the most liberal of liberal Democrats, I would assume, want to be safe and want to feel safe. They might not admit it, but you want to feel safe. And when you see a police officer on guard or a National Guard member on guard, you feel safer. I mean, it's just, in my opinion, that's just fact. That's just absolute fact. So we'll see tonight. I'm interested to see what the pictures of Trump are. Like I said, I don't think he's going to be there with the cuffs, cuffing people. I think he'll have some garb on. Right? He'll probably have like a jacket on or something that says either DC Police or National Guard. They'll take a few pictures of him. But again, he's out there. He's out there. I'm sure he'll be talking with the people that he sees on patrol. And regardless, if it's a photo op or not, you're seeing more of this president in 5 months than you saw the last president in 4 years. That is telling. Again, they're going to tell you it's not normal. They're going to tell you he's authoritarian. They're going to tell you that he's fascist and all these buzzwords that Mark Poloncarz likes to use on his social media. But at the end of the day, he's visible. He's accountable. He talks to the media. He calls on Caitlin Collins regularly. Caitlin Collins has never asked him a favorable question. I don't know if that's true. Mostly, Caitlin Collins is trying to get him on a gotcha question. But he talks to the media more than any president I can remember. The media loved Obama. I don't think Obama talked to the media, especially in the Oval Office setting, as much as Trump does. 803-0930-star-930. Give me your comparison. If you had to compare the visibility of the two presidents, Biden and Trump, what's the word you would use? 803-0930-star-930 on News Radio 930 WBEN. Great to be with you here on this Thursday afternoon as we're getting close to the weekend. We're getting close to the first weekend of college football. Yes, it's week zero, but there are some games. I'm not going to say any of them are exciting, but there are some games this weekend to get that feel for college football. And then obviously the following weekend is Labor Day weekend, and that is when all or most of the schools are in action. And I will be down in the sunny city of Atlanta, Georgia, for Virginia Tech, South Carolina, Sunday at 3 next week. Cannot wait. And I'm excited. You know, as much, I said this on Facebook earlier, I love summer. And, you know, I talked about the importance of getting out there and enjoying this weather. I love summer. It is by far the best season, right? Most people are in a great mood for a majority of summer. Obviously, we all have bad days, right? We all have, life gets in the way sometimes. But for the most part, most people are in a generally good mood throughout the summer. But I mean, I do think fall is right there, right? I mean, once you accept that summer's over and realize that you better enjoy fall because then it's going to be freezing cold, there's a lot of positives to fall, right? The Hokies are back. The Bills are back. The Sabres are right around the corner. Playoff baseball. The smell of fall. People got fires going. S'more season, right? If you're a boater, really, we're getting to the last month of the boat on the water. So, you know, September's a fun month. And again, I football season's the best. I love college football. I love the NFL. And like I said, I have not fully accepted that summer's over and it's tough to do when it's going to be 80 tomorrow. But once you accept it's over, you do start to enjoy fall. I'm not like the biggest pumpkin spice person. I don't know how that got so popular. Every place you go by, we have our pumpkin spice flavors out. There's pumpkin spice cookies and the, I don't know, it just, it, when I think fall, like you have to think of it because it's everywhere now. But like pumpkin spice, it's not the, oh, it's fall. I have to run and get pumpkin spice. I am one millennial that will not say, oh, it's pumpkin spice season. Let's go get some pumpkin spice, whatever. No, not much. But, you know, the pumpkin patch, it's a nice fall event. It's also a great blooming onion event, I'm just going to say. You know, see, we've got fall. The beginning of fall is good. I like it all until it snows. And like I said, I love Christmas. Christmas is by far my favorite holiday. I love Christmas music. But man, snow feels a lot different on December 25th than it does on February 25th. And you know what I mean. My whole thing has always been, it can be cold on Christmas. We can have snow on Christmas. If it was 75 on New Year's Day, that would be great. A cold holiday season, and then a switch is flipped, and it's 75 on New Year's Day. But whatever your favorite fall activity is, hopefully you got it booked up and ready to go. When we come back, we talked last week about the NFTA and the light rail and the survey on the light rail. Well, ladies and gentlemen, go back to that tape if you have to, because I told you I'd love to see a breakdown of where the people surveyed lived. And guess what? Well, I'll tell you. I'm not going to tell you now. It's a tease. You got to stay through the news. But we found out exactly where the respondents were from compared to where this rail is going in. We'll tell you about that. The NFTA has also said, well, we need cooperation from UB when it comes to something else. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk to Back to School. I was at a big box store on the boulevard across from where they're going to put a Costco earlier today. And man, was it packed with people going back to school. All that and much more. Joe Beamer in for Tom Bowerly, 803-0930, star 930 is the call-in. You can also text us at 803-0930 on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Tom Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Thank you for making us a part of your day, a part of your life. 803-0930, star 930, gets you onto the show. We're going to get to this NFTA thing in a minute, but the paper had an interesting article today. Yes, I skimmed through the paper on the Erie County Water. And I'm hoping there's some, if anyone out there understands the water and the water treatment and all that stuff, because in this article, they're talking about the lead in the water, which is embarrassing. Again, I haven't heard the county executive talk about that. The lead in the water, and in this article, it says that they're researching, you know, different chemicals to put to lower the lead. And then where is, it says, oh my gosh, a chemical they put in now to help with corrosion. And I don't, does that not get in the water? Okay, they use sodium hydroxide for anti-corrosion work. Does that not seep into the water? Is that in the water? Because if you come in contact with sodium hydroxide, like, it could irritate your skin, your eyes. Is that in our Erie County water? I didn't really understand, and the article kind of moved right away from it after mentioning it. So if anyone that knows water, because we're trying to get a water person on, but if there's anyone out there that knows water and you can pass Tanner's test to certify you, I'd love to know, because I'm getting more and more scared to drink out of my tap. And, you know, I have been a tap water drinker since day one. So I would just like to know, am I drinking the stuff that's in, that irritates your skin? That might explain the peeling skin above my eye. But this is the kind of stuff that's in drain and oven cleaners. And they're using it. Are they on the pipes? Is it run through the water? The article was very vague, which it's the Buffalo News, so obviously. The Buffalo, again, I don't want to make this a bit about the Buffalo News. We talk about them enough. But, you know, you've got one guy talking about how he watches the weather. Never mind. We're not even going to say it. 803-0930, star 930. So if you know water and can answer that question, call in and we'll get you on the air. So the NFTA, we've been talking about this metro rail system. And again, I will stand by my comment from not just last week, but from years ago when I said, if you were going to expand the metro, the last possible chance to do that, in my opinion, was 25 years ago. So we got this big survey about how 72% of Western New Yorkers support the project for the light rail extension to UB North. Now, when we first got that, we didn't have the exact numbers of who and how many people 72% was. Well, only 1,042 people were surveyed for that poll. Only 42% of those surveyed lived in either Buffalo, Amherst, or Tonawanda. The majority of those polled don't live in the adjacent area of the planned extension. And by the way, the 42%, that doesn't mean they live on the extension, or that they would be affected by the extension, or that they would take the extension. We're going to get back to that in a second, but Dan in Cheektowaga has been kind enough to call in and answer our question. Dan, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day.
Sure, Joe. The sodium hydroxide is used for pH adjustment. Okay, if the pH is below 7, 0 to 14 is the pH scale, 0 to 7 is acid, 7 to 14 is base, 7 is neutral. So a lot of groundwater, depending where it comes from, the source of the water, coming out of the lakes, it tends to be acidic. So what you want to try to do is get your water close to 7 for drinking water. And by doing that, it really reduces the corrosion. If the water is acidic, it just rusts pipes. I mean, try putting a little bit of acid on a piece of metal and watch what happens sometime. But it's not, I mean, yes, sodium hydroxide is a chemical that's used in a lot of stuff. When it gets added to water, what it does, it hydrolyzes. So you have sodium ions, no different than if you put salt in water. You have sodium ions and chloride ions. In this case, you put it in, it hydrolyzes, which means basically the OH and the H plus are ions in water. Okay, that makes H2O. It's no different. I mean, the only thing you can say is they're adding some sodium to my water. Otherwise, if you look at the OH portion of it, hydrolyzed, it's water.
So by the time it comes out of my faucet, it's not going to be harmful to me?
No.
Okay.
No, they wouldn't put it in if it was harmful to you.
I know that. I just, you know, when I hear chemicals of anything, Dan, I get freaked out.
And unfortunately, I'm an old guy, and I grew up at the time when chemicals had, you know, Dow Chemical, Better Life Through Chemistry. I mean, you know, you grew up in a generation where you're taught that every chemical's bad. All chemicals are bad. And it's not necessarily a bad thing to teach that, but you have to understand it. Our whole life is chemicals. Your whole body is chemicals. Everything you touch is a chemical. So, you know, it's unfortunate because I also work in some, I've worked at, and currently work in some heavy industry, and the young people that come in, they just look at the chemicals and they just freak out. And it's like, oh God, please. But, and you know, it's because of the history and how, if you look back in over the years, we weren't necessarily responsible in how we handled chemicals. Love Canal, the Cuyahoga River burning for a week in Cleveland. I mean, you know, the old attitude was, I can't hurt you. So we just dump them anywhere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, starting with the hippies, and they weren't wrong, they were the first environmentalists. We've done a 180 on chemicals to the point where, as a chemical engineer, my industry has been thrown out of this country. The opportunities that were presented to me when I was in college were absolutely astounding. And then the clean water, the EPA came along under Nixon. Oh, a Republican did big government. Yeah, and he did OSHA too. So all of a sudden, the Clean Water and Clean Air Acts came along. Not that they were bad, not that they weren't needed, but what it basically did is it made it impossible to do that business in this country anymore. And a lot of people say, well, good, you know, we don't want to do in this country. Well, it's done in some country. So a lot of the chemical industry went to India and Mexico. And again, a lot of people say, well, good, they can have it. And okay, but everything, then you get into this whole tariffs, make it here. Well, a big part of make it here is the chemicals too. So if we have to pay tariffs on anything that's imported, it's going to also be on these chemicals that we import to make products because we don't make them here.
Dan,
you know, I've been involved in evaluations to try to site a chemical plant on a big chemical manufacturer in Rochester, and twice when we went way down the road on all the regulatory things we needed to site a new plant, we would get stopped at New Source Review. And New Source Review would require that the money we would have to spend to build that plant to the requirements of the modern laws, it would take 40 to 50 years to pay it back. And there's no company in this world that's going to do that. Our refineries, we have the same refineries we've had since the 70s, because New Source Review will only allow you to repair existing facilities within the footprint of that facility, but they will not allow you to build new or expand. So we opine about how our refineries are are running right up to a maximum, it's because we can't build a new one.
Dan,
and, you know, you can make the argument when we go electric, who's going to need them, so the hell with them. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Dan, I want to ask you about, since we're on chemicals, orthophosphate that they're talking about putting in water to coat the pipes so less lead breaks off into the water. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's a phosphorus. And again, yeah, ideally, if we could do it, Joe, if we could afford it, we would go in and slip line all these pipes. And what that involves is pulling a plastic, well, just use the word plastic. It's a polymer liner. You pull it in flat, okay, so you can pull it down the pipe. And then at both ends, you flange it out, and then you pressurize it up, and you blow mold it basically in place, and it molds to the pipe. Now your pipe, now your water is no longer exposed to the metal pipe. Now it's exposed to the polymer liner. And in a lot of places, this is how they've remediated some of this lead issue, because to dig them up and replace them in some cases, especially in the cities, is just, it's astronomical in cost. So you line them. And the orthophosphate is a poor man's way to do it on your entire water system, but it doesn't do anywhere near like a liner does.
Yeah. So what do you know about the lead pipes? How long is that process going to take to actually get them out?
Well, it kind of confounds me that they don't know where they're at. And I guess that goes back to record keeping. You know, who kept the records for all the projects when they were laying the lines on what kind of materials they used? Lead pipes have not been used. Oh, my God. Not in my lifetime, let's put it that way, and I'm pushing 70. So lead pipes were an old, old thing because lead was great. It didn't corrode. Okay? So lead was seen as great. Plumbum. You know, that's what the periodic table name, that's why it's PB for lead. It's plumbum. Well, it's because that's what we used for plumbing, because it was impervious to water. It was easy to fabricate because it's soft. You can mold it. You can form it. You can do all kinds of stuff to it. And quite frankly, you know, when I was a kid, all paint had lead in it. I mean, the biggest crime that was put on the people of my generation was leaded gas. I spent my entire, you know, childhood until the 80s when they stopped it, sitting in traffic where lead particles are coming out all the exhaust pipes and you're breathing them. You know, so we didn't know about lead. It's just like you go back to the old cans and from the canning factories. They used to seal the ends. They used to seal them with lead. They think that one explorer up in the Arctic, I forget the name of it, but they lost track of all of them.
Yeah.
Are you there, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I heard something ding. They don't know what happened to them because they all just kind of wandered off into nowhere. Well, they exhumed their dump up there, and they found all the tin cans, and they all were with lead, you know?
Wow.
So they probably all got lead poisoned because everything they ate came out of a can. We didn't know about this stuff. I mean, all of a sudden, the 80s come along, and we go, oh, lead bad. You know?
Yeah, that's all, you know, Dan, that's the funny thing, because, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, right, they were still removing lead paint off of playgrounds and stuff, and,
yeah,
so for my whole life, it's been removing lead, and it's amazing that we still have, but like you said, I mean, that makes sense, the record keeping wasn't like it is today.
Yeah, some of those pipes are probably well over 100 years old.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and the hell of it is, they don't go bad. So it's not like they expired their lifetime and we dug them up and replaced them. No, those lead pipes are still just as good as when they put them in.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. It is Joe Beamer in for Tom Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Appreciate Dan calling in and giving his insight on water and these chemicals they're putting in. But, you know, he is right. I mean, you know, for me, someone who's 36 years old, you hear chemicals, you go, what? Ooh, in the water? You know, but I mean, that's the reality of the stuff coming out of your tap, and the lead pipes. I mean, so according to this article, was about the lead pipes in the Buffalo News, by the way, and you know, the sodium hydroxide that they used for anti-corrosion, and then the orthophosphate that they're going to use to coat the pipes, reducing the amount of lead that breaks off into the water. Regardless, these pipes need to be replaced by 2037. So when my son's 14, I mean, think about how ridiculous that is. Lead pipes. We've known lead was bad since the late 70s. And now I'm 36. We still have a problem with lead. You know, when I was a kid, it was removing the lead from the playgrounds, removing the lead from cribs and all that stuff in the houses, right? Cleaning, you know, scraping the paint off with a gas mask on and rubber gloves and all that. Now, I'm 36, and there will still be lead pipes in Erie County until my son is 14. That doesn't, you know, that's... seems like it's taken a while. And you can say, well, Joe, you know how much work that is and how much money? The county just spent $7 million on a golf course. Do I know how much money it is? $7 million on a golf course in Amherst that they didn't have to take that over. They got it for a dollar and have already approved $7 million. Oh, but the pipes are going to take a while. The lead pipes are going to take a while. The county doesn't have the resources. We have the $7 million for the golf course in Amherst and the money for Mark Poloncarz's vacations around the country. But the lead pipes, hey, whoa, 2037. Don't rush us. We've only known lead was bad for five decades. Like, that's the thing. And then, like, you're the idiot because you question it? That's one of the main things that bothers me, especially with the administration in this county. And it's not much different at the state level. Like, I'm an idiot for asking that question? I don't think so. Of course, I don't think I'm an idiot. But you're spending $7 million on a golf course in Amherst that you did not need to. You voluntarily walked up there and go, hey, Brian Culpa, give me this golf course. I'll tee off in the weeds for the photo op. But yet, hey, whoa, we're doing our best with the lead pipes. It's going to take us till 2037. Hey, we're trying as many as we can by 2027. But 2037, we'll have the lead pipes out of there. All right. 803-0930, start 930. We'll get back to this NFTA story after the news on WBEN. Welcome back. It's Joe Beamer in for Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN, continuing to take you through Ultimate Dance Party 1997. That's another track off that great album from back in the day. 803-0930, star 930. I just read, I know I'm not supposed to read criticisms and then bring it up on the air, but you know what? I'm going to say it. I just read a criticism that I sound like I'm talking through my nose. So now I'm going to have to work on that. And I will try my best. I apologize if that's how it sounds. But, you know, sometimes you just shouldn't search your name on Google, especially when you're in the midst of doing a show. Anyway, 803-0930, star 930 gets you onto the show. All right. Again, I appreciate Dan's call giving his insight into water and the chemicals they're throwing into the water here in Erie County. Again, I just think it's ridiculous. All these side projects the county is getting itself involved in. The pipes can wait. Oh, the people can ingest more lead. I need to build my golf course. That's a little, just a little ridiculous, in my opinion. And that's what the show, it's my opinion. I'd love to hear yours. 803-0930, star 930. And by the way, we are, you know, yesterday was National Radio Day. So we talked to radio greats throughout the show. Wednesdays with a Democrat will return next Wednesday, even though I am in for Bowerly another week. We'll just move it to 3 o'clock. So I am looking for my Wednesday Democrat next week, 3 o'clock. Yeah, a little later than usual. So if you are a Democrat or you have a friend or family member that would like to be my Democrat of the week for, well, I will take a Democrat's call whenever, but the segment, you want to participate in my Wednesday segment, you can email me, joe.beamer@wben.com. All right, so this, if you're just joining us, welcome. It is Beamer in for Bowerly. Your clock's not wrong. The NFTA survey that we talked about last week while I was at the fair, which, by, isn't it funny? The fair all... So it goes on to say, it really actually doesn't work. I mean, that's 30,000 students they have there at North Campus, faculty and staff. They are a key component to the ridership. I think it's an appetite there for them to get away from the Stampede service. Think. Now, that's the problem. Again, I mean, maybe I'm just like too matter of a fact. Like, if I'm planning to do something, right? Like, hey, Tanner, I'm not going to go to traffic this segment. But I don't tell Tanner that. I just assume he's not going to hit the traffic bed at 450. Maybe that's an awful analogy, but you get what I'm saying? Like, I thought that would have been in the early stages of planning this. Hey, UB, if we build the light rail system to connect your campuses, will you get rid of the Stampede service? Yes or no? Can you commit to that today? So that's a very telling moment. This goes on. Amplement says, this is not a UB project. There's a lot of potential riders along the corridor, too, that are disabled, younger, older folks, and, of course, choice riders, too. So we're looking to target them as well. But, again, if the Stampede service continues... this extension, quote, doesn't really work. So, like, to me, maybe we put this on pause, or maybe we do another survey and see where the appetite, you talk about the appetite maybe to shut down the Stampede service, maybe we ask the appetite for people in Amherst, Tonawanda, and Buffalo along this extension, hey, are you cool with this? Would you be using this? Right? I mean, you're on the boulevard. Go a few neighborhoods back. Hey, if there was a rail service in walking distance to your house, would you be more likely to take the NFTA Metro Rail? Like, we can't get that survey? Because realistically, that's who this is going to target. Right? Now, if I'm going to tell you right now, as much as I don't think this works, I think we're 25 years too late on this. If I lived near the rail, and this extension happened, it'd be going right by here, by the way, right? Tanner might have to put his bike on the rail if it's raining, right? But it would go by here. If I lived along the path, I would take it every day. I'm telling you that right now. So, again, I might be in the minority because I grew up taking the train, and I realize that. But that's the survey people want. That's the survey people want out there. Instead, you know, we're going to, and this isn't the NFTA, this is, you know, people I've seen ridicule people who, you know, oh my gosh, you care about your home property value? Ridicule them. Tell them, you know, they need to shut up. Well, how about we just have a discussion with people along the proposed extension? Do you want this? Would you use this? Because if that's a majority no, and you can't get a 100% yes, we will end the Stampede service from UB, then it looks like we're back at the drawing board, because you're admitting it doesn't make sense if the Stampede service continues. Again, things that should be determined, right? I go into a radio show with topics. They're determined. I'm not pulling them out of thin air. If you're going to build this light rail that you know is going to be mostly for students, you got to be prepared to... UB, are you going to end your Stampede service? No? Okay, we're not going to extend the light rail. Next. There it is. I think it's 25 years too late. And you know, I also think we're probably talking about something that's not going to happen anyway. This has the likelihood of happening that the 33 has likelihood of having a tunnel. And, you know, I mean, I will continue to point out, just so people, I don't want people tuning in and go, my gosh, this guy is all against public transit. No. I grew up taking this, well, when I moved here in 99, when my family moved here in 99, when we would go downtown, we'd take the train. So I'm not anti-public transportation. I'm not anti-train. I'd like to think I'm realistic. And the way the rail stands today, you're 25 years too late. Now, if it had been built to the airport in the 80s, to the falls in the 80s, and now you wanted to expand it, maybe there's a different discussion. But if you're admitting that unless UB ends its own bus service, this $2 billion project doesn't work, I might get some paper, I might get some documents and an agreement from UB that they'd end their bus service. Because why would you go forward with a $2 billion project if it doesn't? Again, that seems very simple. I might get the answer to that before I get an environmental impact study. It's a $2 billion project. And you're prepared to go through with this and then go to UB and go, we'd really like you to end your bus service. What? I don't know, man. I don't know. 803-0930, star 930 gets you on the show. What do you think about this? Am I just misunderstanding this? Like, am I wrong to think that this question should have been asked 2 years ago when this planning started? The $2 billion project doesn't really work unless UB ends its own bus service. Okay, so let's get an answer out of them before we go any further with this. And on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board, someone says, Joe, this topic has been discussed weeks ago. Move on. Again, this is a new wrinkle to the topic. It's not the same topic. We actually had two things brought up in the last 24 hours. Where these people surveyed were from. Again, only 42% from the towns affected. And that doesn't mean they're from the areas affected. And that UB needs to end its bus service for this $2 billion project to make sense. So, yes, the light rail was discussed weeks ago, but this is a different wrinkle in the light rail. Let's go to Jim in Buffalo. Hey, Jim, thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Jim. What do you think about this?
Well, I should say I'm treasurer for Citizens for Regional Transit, and we advocate for the light rail. And what I think is that most people should be aware that the UB North campus was built on the very foundation that there would be light rail, and the architects built that into the campus structure. Even when it was smaller, when there were only 20,000 students, the university expected light rail to go to the North campus and that the buses were supposed to be temporary. They simply can't handle the volume. If you've got 30,000 people that you want to move students back and forth every day, it just costs too much, and there's a shortage of bus drivers, so they had to cut back service the last couple years. It's just not a workable solution.
Jim, I understand that, but doesn't it make sense for the NFTA to get in writing that UB will end this service when the light rail is up and running?
I would be very surprised if they don't have that already.
Now, let me ask you, because we've talked before, and, you know, I grew up taking the train downtown. I didn't know people drove downtown until I got my license, because my family was always, you know, get the train at South Campus and ride it to where you got to go in the city. But, you know, I look at this, and I think, man, I look at that original layout for what the rail system was supposed to be in 1980. And, you know, it just obviously never got to that, and UB North was part of those plans. Do you think there might be more appetite? Because I know what the survey said, but when we do this topic, there is a lot of negativity towards it. Do you think, and I know we can't get in the DeLorean and change time, but if this had done half of the original plan, that there might be more acceptance towards this project today?
I do. We're aware that in the 1960s and 70s, that it was a plan that was being implemented, but then New York City had bankruptcy issues and the money was sent downstate and never brought back. And after that, we had massive exodus of from city to suburban, and the demographic mix changed. But we're still in a situation where we have a lot of people we need to move between the two campuses, and this is the least expensive way to do it.
Now, when we're talking about Maple Road, what will Maple Road from the Boulevard to Sweet Home look like once the rail is up and running?
So the rail will come, let's say we're starting from the south and we're headed north on Niagara Falls Boulevard. It's going to make a right turn at Maple Road. There's some issue whether it will go through the Boulevard Mall property or sort of around the outside of it, depending on whether the town of Amherst and the developers can get their act together in time before the thing gets built. Then it moves to the center, where there's going to be a stop in front of the middle school, which was right where they had the public meeting. And then it would continue and make a left onto Sweet Home Road and use an underground tunnel if it's going to be rail, or it would be just adding more buses to the intersection on the surface if they use the bus option. And then it goes on the right-hand side of Sweet Home up to Wrench Road and then cuts over through the campus.
Let me ask you, you said that the campus was built with the rail in mind. The plan that they want to put in effect, is that what the plan looked like originally to include UB North, or was it a different path in the past?
It was slightly different. They had it coming in the, I would call it the southwest corner of it where the power plant is now. And that's where they thought it might come in. But they also thought it might come in through Millersport Highway. They kept both options open. And the university over all the years has kept the rights of way open for either path.
Now, Jim, is this the, I remember, you know, was it a year or so ago, there were two paths. One brought it further down the boulevard, and maybe I'm making that up. Do you like the path that is planned out?
Are you asking me to speak for the organization or for me?
Well, Jim, we got you on the line, so why don't you speak for yourself? Do you like the proposed path?
I do, and I struggle with whether I would have preferred going up Millersport Highway in Grover, Cleveland, and just having two stops after the University South Campus Station, one at Flint Road and one on the North Campus. That's far less expensive. I think it's better from a transit rider point of view. Until I talked to Jeff, who you mentioned earlier, and he explained, okay, what do we do when the university is closed? We'll have to shut the train service down and run a bus. And then all these other people, like you were saying, if you lived next to it, you would go and take it. And so you wouldn't be able to do that under my plan, but you would be able to under Jeff's plan. And so I think Jeff's plan has quite a bit of merit.
One last question I have for you. Would there be, do you know, if there are planning to have express trains between the campuses?
Probably not between the campuses, but if you think about, say, a Bills game where you've got 20,000 parking spaces on the UB campus and you attract thousands of cars there and you're going to run all these people down to the end at the new DL&W terminal and pop them onto a shuttle bus to the Bills game, those kinds of things, I do think they would have an express bus, a nonstop train from UB's campus all the way down to the DL&W terminal.
All right. Hey, Jim, appreciate, as always, the conversation. 803-0930-930. If you have a take on this or something Jim said, call in, get on hold. We'll talk with you after the news on WBEN.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Hey, welcome back. Final hour. Beamer in for Bowerly here on News Radio 930 WBEN 803-0930, star 930. Gets you on the show. Anything we've discussed so far today, let me know what you think. This next one, this one's going to be rough for me to do, guys. I talked about it ending the show yesterday. David's talked about it. Chris talked about it. Well, I have to get on it because one of my favorite restaurants of all time is Cracker Barrel. I'm not ashamed to say I love Cracker Barrel. I love biscuits and gravy. I love the breakfast sampler. I love the sweet tea. I love the friendliness of the wait staff. I love the big fireplace in the winter. I like the country store that actually looks like a country store. Stuff thrown all around, shirts from all over the place, toys that they had when I was 8 years old. That's the Cracker Barrel I know and love. And that's the Cracker Barrel I know I'm going to get if I'm in Amherst, New York, or if I'm in Beckley, West Virginia. And unfortunately, a new CEO has come in and is trying to ruin the Cracker Barrel that we know and love. Now, as I said yesterday, she has the Stephen Colbert, Rachel Maddow glasses. And she is doing what so many people have done, and that is destroy a brand. And this is happening way too much in America, with restaurants, with businesses that we, again, know and love. So yesterday, I played this for you. She said this on Good Morning America. I don't believe her, but this is what she said.
Really positive that people like what we're doing. I'll give you another soundbite. I actually happened to be in Orlando last week with all of our managers. We bring them together and every other year. And the number one question that I got asked, Michael, was, how can I get a remodel? When can I get a remodel? How do I get on the list?
Oh, really?
So because the feedback and the buzz is so good, not only from our customers, but from our team members. They want to work in a wonderful restaurant. So
Sure. So if you've been to Cracker Barrel, right, it's got, I said this yesterday, it's got this homey feel. You feel like you're home, right? It's got the wooden chairs, you got the rocking chairs outside. They're usually near a hotel. You've got the rocking chairs, and then you go in, you got the wooden tables, the wooden chairs, again, the fireplace, the country music. It's got an identity. You know, that used to mean something in business in America, was having an identity. And now, Julie Fels-Mazzino wants to go from what you know and love to a generic diner feeling. Nothing against diners. I love diners. But a generic, lifeless dining area with, you know, a booth is nice at a diner. A booth is nice at a Waffle House. A booth does not belong in Cracker Barrel. I will die on this hill. And she's changing the logo of Cracker Barrel. Getting rid of Uncle Herschel. She's changing the menu. And just taking the life out of a restaurant we know and love. And why is she doing this? Why would anyone want to change the feel of Cracker Barrel? I don't get it. Why do you want to be just like every other restaurant? Oh, well, when we look at where else she's been, Starbucks. Makes a little more sense now. She wants Cracker Barrel to be more like Starbucks. And what happened to Cracker Barrel today after the release? Well, Cracker Barrel loses almost $200 million in value. Its stock plunges after new logo release. And this is a theme in the last decade. Just taking the life out of a business. So I went down a rabbit hole of documentaries last night on YouTube. You know who else wanted to change their identity because it was, quote, getting too old? Ruby Tuesdays. They wanted to replace it with a more modern look. Ruby Tuesdays is on like its last leg. You know who else tried to go for a modern look and get away from its identity? TGI Fridays. TGI Fridays is no longer in Western New York. That's what happens. And then, yes, you can all point to, well, Joe, McDonald's, you know, it has this lifeless. Yeah, you're right. It's really sad. It's a generic, lifeless look. McDonald's, Burger King, they all want to look the same. You've got, again, TGI Fridays, Ruby Tuesdays. This look to be modern. It's like, if I'm going to one of these chain restaurants, like I know what I'm getting, right? That's what I'm hoping to get. The feel, the identity. I want to be able to tell the difference between a Cracker Barrel and a Waffle House or a Cracker Barrel and a Bob Evans. And their answer to bringing more business to Cracker Barrel is to sweep it of its identity, re-envision the country store, re-envision the dining area. Is this someone who's trying to revive the brand, or is this someone who's trying to kill the brand? You got to ask yourself, is this someone trying to kill Cracker Barrel? I'm not a business guy. I don't get it, right? But why go away from having an identity? Again, this has killed businesses in the past. The theme of Cracker Barrel, a big part of that is the dining room, the country store, because it feels like a country store. Has this woman been to a country store? Have you gotten out of the office and gone to a Cracker Barrel and actually talked to the people at the Cracker Barrel, like the regulars? I'm sorry to make this political, but it's these liberal CEOs. They get in a place of position and they feel like they have to just blend in with every other modern, boring design. And they all have the same glasses and they all have the same ideology. Right? As soon as we change the interior of Cracker Barrel, well, we also have to make sure that we have our liberal initiatives as part of our app. But I do not understand why all these businesses, not just Cracker Barrel, it pains me that Cracker Barrel, that this woman's trying to change a restaurant that my favorite part about it is it's exactly what I got 30 years ago. That's the point. Why did you stop at Cracker Barrel? Because I know what I'm getting. I know what's going to happen when I go in there, and I'm going to be pleased. I walk into this new modern one. Where am I? This is a Cracker Barrel. She's probably going to take the country music away, too. 803-0930, star 930. So here's what I want to talk about, because I know David talked about this, and I know Chris talked about this. I want to know, was there a business, whatever type of business, that had a reinvention like this, right? That went to that modern look that really broke your heart. Any business people out there that can answer why over the last 10 years we have had all these popular areas, popular businesses just lose their identity? Is there a strategy to that? Why does it keep happening? I know we have smart people that listen to the show. I'd love to hear why, in your business expertise, does this continue to happen? You drive down transit, every place looks the same. I miss when they all had an identity. The other thing is they're going to change the menu. Like, I'm sorry. How can you change the menu? That's what when you go to Cracker Barrel, you want Southern style food. You want biscuits and gravy. You want catfish. You want, I mean, that's what you're going there for. What are you going to put on the menu? I just don't get it. We're going to change the logo. We're going to change the menu. We're going to change the decor. Why don't you just change the name then? Like, if you're going to strip this business of its, the reason it's Cracker Barrel and not Applebee's, it doesn't make any sense to me. Let's go to Sam in Williamsville. Maybe he can enlighten me. Sam, thanks for hanging on.
Yeah, Joe. Good afternoon. Here's my take. That businesses, and I'm not sure if they may be a shareholder type company. They may not. I don't know. I like the product too. I'm a repeat customer. But business leaders are charged with continuing to improve the brand. And the bottom line metric is their net operating profit after taxes. All right? That's how they operate as a business. I don't really think, based on their brand, that they're going to change the quality of their food products, because that's their gold standard right now. They might change the design a little bit, I guess is what I hear you saying. I don't know all the details.
Yeah, so they're changing the decor. They're making the dining room look more, just look, you know, more generic. It's going to have booths and white walls. They're going to get rid of all the you walk into a Cracker Barrel, it's got all the tchotchkes. They're getting rid of all that stuff on the walls. It's going to lose its identity.
Well, that may be. I'm sure. That's a true statement. I bet you they've studied it for about 2 years. They've done a feasibility analysis. They've done a quality control analysis. And there's some reason behind that kind of thought process from a business perspective. I hear what you're saying. I like the decor. I think it's very intriguing. All right. But that's my opinion.
So Sam, let me ask you this, because the reason I don't see the reasoning when you look back, and Ruby Tuesdays tried to change their identity and it failed. Fridays tried to change their identity. So why would you know what I mean? You look back, you study that you're a food place. If you're Cracker Barrel, why would someone think this is going to be different? I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
Like I said, I bet you they've been studying this for about 2 years. They've had a team of professionals studying, what the change process should look like and what the outcomes are projected to be. All right. And that is, what they're charged with as a leadership team. as an executive team. And we can think whatever we want to think, but they're going to do what they want to do. Now, fundamentally, I may not disagree with you, but they have every right to determine what their future looks like. And the bottom line metric is the outcome, and that is what I could refer to as NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. Is it going up or is it going down? Now, that is the key business metric. They could design whatever they want. They could design something for the 22nd century, all right, that would be a cool model. I don't know. But, you know, that's what business leaders are charged with. You know, yeah, it's nice to keep the archetype of, let's just say, whatever. Even Ted's Hot Dogs is moving in a different direction. You know, as small as a business as that is, and they have quite the following. But that's just my opinion. You know, Fortune 50 companies and above do the same thing, you know, all the time. IHOP to whatever, you know, I'm assuming it's a successful business model. I don't know what their bottom line NOPAT is. There's got to be some rationale for moving in a different direction. But I do not think their gold standard of the quality of their food. They may reduce their menu and go with the less is more strategy, you know, based on the cost dynamics. But I don't think their overall quality of their products is going to change. Is the appearance going to change? Yeah.
Yeah,
but the quality of their products, I don't think will.
Well, let's hope they don't touch breakfast, Sam. They can touch everything else in that menu. Just keep breakfast the way it is. Appreciate the call, Sam in Williamsville. 803-0930, *930. Or is it this? You know, she got into power as a CEO, and you know, there's something about Cracker Barrel she doesn't like. I don't know. I appreciate Sam's input, and I understand what he's saying. But to me, this just seems like. This plan is going, I can tell you right now, this plan's going to fail. 803-0930, *930, back after this.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Let's see if I can figure it out. Is this Deborah Cox?
It is Deborah Cox. Who do you love?
All right.
It's funny. I pulled the song from YouTube, and there's only one comment on this particular video, and it's still twerking to this in 2018.
I'm glad I got it. I'm surprised because Deborah Cox had the big song, you know, How Did You Get Here? Nobody's Supposed to Be Here. And there was the slow version of that song, the dance, because in the 90s, you know, you had to release the single, and it had 18 different versions of the song on it. And that's what I know Deborah Cox from. But then, obviously, she's on Ultimate Dance Party 97. So, Tanner, we have one day left. How many tracks do we have left?
You put me on the spot here.
Sorry.
With my worst school subject. Let's see. We got one. I'm going to have to count it out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So by tomorrow, we'll cut it down to the last three. And you best believe I'm throwing some heat tomorrow. I saved the heavy hitters for last.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see what you think are the heavy hitters. That's what I'm happy to see. All right. Tanner is, got the tracks to Ultimate Dance Party 97. And then, you know, next week, we're going to have to work on our outfits because we're going to have to start going thrift shopping to put our Wham! Outfits together for Halloween. 803-0930, star 930 gets you on the show. It's Joe Beamer in for Tom Bowerly. Hope you're having a great Thursday. Anything that we've talked about today that you wanted to get in on, it's open. I'm not gonna tell you no. If you want to comment on something, you weren't able to do it when we were talking about it, that's fine. These checks that the governor is putting out, you know, I talk about this so often, and I'm sorry that I sound like a broken record, but these $400 checks that the governor is putting out, this is a great example of someone who is just so removed from reality and the real world. Now, obviously, she's doing this because there's an election coming up next year. Do you think she'll do this in 2 years if she's reelected? But the inflation refund check that that everyone's going to be getting, right? The most you can get is a $400 check. How do you get a $400 check? If you file jointly with your significant other and make less than $150,000 in 2023, okay? That is going to be how you get this check. And the governor going around talking like this is the greatest thing. Her comment, more money in your pockets. Inflation refund checks are coming this October. October? New York is mailing out inflation refund checks. Here's how much you can expect and when. Okay, most people, even the poorest of poor, $400 is not going to fix whatever issue they are in. Okay? Most people who are bad with money will take $400 and spend it irresponsibly. But you know what would help people more? You know what would help people? Tanner, can you pick up that call on the contest line? I know the person calling in, and I'm wondering why they're calling the contest line. You know what would help more people out? I'm just going to tell you. What would help people out is if you cut taxes. And you know how you could cut taxes? By cutting down the bloated government that is New York State. Most people, most hardworking people, most people who, you know, work 6 days a week, families of four, families of five, families of three, that are struggling, it's not the $400 that's going to help them. But when you put in your budget, and again, it tells you how little you think of the constituents. When you put $10 million in the budget for Tish James' legal defense, or $2.5 billion in the budget for illegal immigrants, yet you think $400, which to most people is maybe 2 weeks of groceries, maybe, you think that's going to do it, even though the cost of electricity has just gone up in New York State? Again, this is just, it just shows how out of touch the governor is with the average person. And she's not the only one. Let's be honest. It's not just Governor Kathy Hochul. There's a lot of people that serve in our government that are detached from reality because of how long they've been in the crooked system that is government. And she's not issuing this again. She's not issuing these to help you. She thinks she can buy a vote. And by the way, I would like to say I was on record as to saying the last round of COVID relief checks I thought was overkill. So I can be critical of both sides of the political aisle. This is not the way to do it. I don't understand why in New York the answer is just to hand money that's not yours out to people instead of actually come up with a not so bloated budget. actually come up and decrease the budget. Find a way to cut taxes. That's how you do it. Not one-time $400 checks that I'm sure there's people out there who have spent them before they're even in the mail. But it's an election year, and the last election was close, so obviously she feels she's got to get a head start on this one, and now she can say, hey, remember, I gave you $400. I don't know. Is there one person out there that will say, well, Kathy Hochul gave me $400, so I think I'll vote for her. I can't imagine that changing anyone's mind. Maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe you'll believe that she'll just do it again and again and again. Again, she's not going to put out there, look at the budget. But that's what's hurting people. The taxes, how expensive it is to live in this state. The fact that I have to pay $18 to get to Syracuse. All the sales tax. You know, you have to pay to do anything in New York State. That's what's killing people. It's the day-to-day stuff. And you could help that by lowering people's taxes and cutting the waste. And by the way, your own comptroller told me in March that there is waste in this state. Thomas DiNapoli, who I'm sure he and I do not agree politically, he said there are ways to cut the spending in New York State. So why isn't it being cut? Why can't the Democrats in Albany, that's who's running the show, why can't they cut it? And who the hell, I mean, really, if you put this together, if you just sat there for a second and go, well, Kathy Hochul's giving me $400. Just remember, $10 million of your dollars. You know that job you went to today? Or maybe you're going to tonight. Maybe you work shift work. Or maybe you're going to a second job tonight, like some of us. That job you just worked, the state took the money they collected from that check and took $10 million and gave it to Tish James so she could fight big, evil Donald Trump. Are you still happy with your $400 check after that? $2.5 million went to people who illegally came into this country as they load up cell phones and debit cards and house them in hotels. Does your $400 still feel mighty? You still feel the state's doing everything they can for you? This state doesn't care about you. And let me tell you, they care even less about you if you don't think like them. Remember, Andrew Cuomo said, New York is not a place for conservatives. Mark Poloncarz said that he wants to eliminate conservatives from Amherst. Just remember that. If you don't think like them, they really hate you. But even if you think like them, they don't care. They don't feel like they work for you. Some have said that when caught on a hot mic. Because if they cared about you, they cared about the constituents. $2.5 billion wouldn't be going to illegals. $10 million wouldn't be going to Tish James for claiming residency in Norfolk, Virginia. I think the $400 check, now obviously I'm going to take it and spend it. I'm not an idiot. But don't be fooled that New York State actually cares about you. Because what else have they done? Other than this $400 check, what has New York State done for you? Except take more of your money. I mean, look at your next paycheck. There's probably close to $400 taken out of there in crap the government takes out. And yeah, just my two cents. Again, I also don't think it's just, there's a lot of politicians who don't care about you. A lot of people who don't care about you, right? They take your vote for granted. That happens. That is politics of 2025. It's been politics for my entire lifetime. But I just think it's so phony. Kathy Hochul's out there saying how much she cares about you. Remember, originally the inflation rebate check was supposed to be for your back to school shopping, but now it's not. Now you're not getting it to till October. So there's more issue with that. What happened, Kathy? Why didn't we get it for back to school shopping? But you look at the money they spend, and you look at how much of that money are they spending to better your life. You look through that budget. How much of that money is to better your life, considering you're paying into that budget? Considering your check would be a lot higher if taxes weren't taken out. Think of how many hours a week you work just to pay the tax portion of your paycheck. And New York State is going to tell you they care about you with a $400 inflation rebate check. What a joke. And do I think Kathy Hochul really thinks that's going to change somebody's life? Again, I don't know. I do think that she is wildly removed from reality, as most politicians are. Right? I don't think Kathy Hochul is walking through an Aldi or a Target. I don't think she went and got her, you know, and shopped at TJ Maxx this week. She doesn't know the everyday struggle of a middle-class New Yorker. And she won't listen to anyone, just like pulling cars. She won't listen to anyone who has a differing opinion. So if you were to approach her, which, you know, that would never happen, but if you were to somehow get in a conversation with Kathy Hochul and tell her that the budget, the policies are killing a state that you once loved, she would just write you off. You're a MAGA extremist. That's their answer for everything. People like Governor Hochul, people like County Executive Poloncarz, people like Senator Sean Ryan, they feel they are too important to waste their time talking to people who think differently than them. And so if you say something in disagreement, if you're critical of one of the awful policies they've put their names on, critical of the things they've done to ruin a once beautiful, amazing empire state, then they will label you as a MAGA extremist. They will label you as full of hate, even though if you look at some of their posts lately talking about fighting fire with fire, who's the one full of hate here? Just, again, I'm going to spend my $400. But compared to what they've wasted in this budget, do they really care about you? Thank you so much for the calls, text, and social media interactions. You can email me, joe.beamer@wben.com, if you have anything to say. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.